Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to a continuation of our series on anti-aging. Today, cellular aging and regeneration, the health benefits of nutraceuticals for anti-aging. My guest is Dr. Michael Smith. He's a senior health scientist for Life Extension Foundation, which is the world's leading organization dedicated to anti-aging research into the value and efficacy of nutrients and natural disease prevention and extending the human lifespan. He also is the organization's online personality and key educator. He received his medical degree from the University of Texas, did his internship at the University of Utah, and also was the cardiovascular medical liaison, and was also a consultant in the areas on the web for physicians wanting to know more about health. So he educates physicians, not just the lay public. And he also hosts the Healthy Talk on RadioMD.com. Michael's the author of a recent and important book called The Supplemental Pyramid, which helps guide people to properly creating their personalized nutritional regimen to most effectively deal with the individual health needs. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Gary. I really appreciate it.
We have a dichotomy, and before we get into the specifics about how to slow down the aging process and offer some challenges to those who believe you cannot and have never been able to reverse the aging process, no one can, which I disagree with because I've spent 30 years as a research fellow and scholar at the Institute of Applied Biology doing exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my own research was the first that I'm aware of. I preceded Dr. Roy Warford by 7 years, where I was fasting rats and was able to extend their lifespan by about 12%.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Yeah.
And then I had 3,000 rats, and then I just did something that I didn't know would work, but it was just common sense. I was looking at my family over a weekend, a holiday weekend, down in West Virginia, and I saw how much food they ate, and I saw what they ate. And it had nothing to do with what they needed at all. It had to do with eating a big piece of steak with lots of fat on it. Then it had to do with eating mashed potatoes, muffins, finishing off with some kind of Jell-O-like substance with ice cream on it,
right,
and a cup of coffee and about a half a pack of cigarettes each they were smoking.
Right.
I'm lucky I'm alive based on secondhand smoke. Everyone I knew ate this way. Now, in fact, you were expected to not only eat everything in your plate, but then you were expected to be so full that I would watch as they all unbuckled their belts or opened up the top button on their shirt, like somehow you would have a plunger and plunge
right
down the food so another morsel could get in. And then, of course, they would all kind of go in and just collapse on a couch and snooze and snore for another hour. But no one associated their obesity, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, fatigue, fibromyalgia, arthritis with anything they were doing.
Right. Amazing, huh?
So then here I'm back in the lab, and I'm thinking, what about doing something radically different? So I decided that I would not give the rats any more water. Instead, I would give them fresh-made juices, of which 97% is water. But it's the water from vegetables and fruits. And I would give them sprouted grains. And I would give them root vegetables and sea vegetables. In other words, I was giving them what I ate. And sure enough, they lived 28% longer. One group of 1,500 rats lived a normal life and developed the normal diseases. This group lived much longer. And then 2 years later, I would be giving them glutathione,
right. And
they even lived longer still. Then I gave them L-carnosine in what now would be considered very high doses. What would be in a human about 8,000 milligrams a day I was giving to these rats based upon their weight. And yet, here's the interesting part. When our once-a-month scientific meeting of the 16 departments, and I was the one upstairs considered rather odd nutrition, they were on chemotherapy and drugs, And I would say, well, I just got these rats to live longer. They go, yeah, no. I say, no, I did. No, well, you can't. And I said, but I did.
Yes.
And here's supposedly some of the best and brightest scientists in America, not willing to even come up and see what I was doing. As a result, my work didn't get published, though it did give me the foundation upon which I would understand we could slow down and even reverse the aging process. And to
right.
this day, some people, even in the anti-aging field, even
right,
with the
right.
even with the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine I've interviewed, still don't believe. They believe you can slow it down. They don't believe you can change it. So let's begin with the idea, and here's the larger picture. Tell us what you know we can do about slowing down, and then what you know we can do to repair the damage from our lifestyle and reverse aging.
Right, right. That, no, and I think you hit on an important point here. You can see aging either as a defect or as a design. And there's a lot of people who see aging as a defect, which means it's impossible to treat, and that's where a lot of people believe anti-aging medicine is really a quackery, if you will, even today, right? We still see that. But if you see aging as a design, then you open up to a world of possibilities, don't you? When aging is a design from the cellular level on up, now that means there are points in this design, in this blueprint of aging that we can control. And that offers a lot of benefits to us as individuals and as a society. Now, but let's also define this a little bit more in depth here, because there's two different types of aging. What we focus on at the Life Extension Foundation is the biological aging. That's really the cellular aging, what's happening at the cell level and at the tissue level. There's another type of aging which looks more at the human body, in a sense, the age-related disorders and how we can manage those better. So we focus on the cell, knowing that if we can control, because we do believe aging is a design that can be controlled, if we look at the cellular level and start to study the reasons a cell ages, and we start to manage that, manage those mechanisms, that will ultimately have an effect on the whole organism and help to slow the human aging part of this. So at the foundation, what we've done, Gary, is we've been focusing really since about 1980 on the main theories of cell aging. So and there's about six of them. We have the membrane theory of aging. We have the mitochondrial decline theory of aging, which is loss of cell energy. We have the genetic damage theory, the free radical theory, what's called the cross-linking theory, and then, of course, the hormonal theory of aging. Now, all of these occur at the same time. It's really multifactorial. So I don't want, you know, I'm saying theory because we're still working on a lot of the ins and outs of these mechanisms. So I have to still call them theories, but they do occur. They're all occurring at the same time, and they all play a role in how old a cell is going to act and behave. Now, it's interesting because your family, by the way, Gary, sounds a lot like my family. So I experienced a lot of the same things you did, watching how they eat and how they take care of themselves. And there's a lot of, unfortunately, smokers on my mom's side of the family, which is the Greek side, which is smoking. Everybody smokes over there. And what I'm learning is a couple of things here. What we put into our bodies absolutely can influence not only the biological aging, the cell aging, but also the human aspect of it. So if I'm putting stuff into my body that's causing the metabolic disorders, that's causing the fatigues and the fibromyalgias and the autoimmune disorders and all this kind of stuff, if I'm putting certain things in my body that are causing them, then I should be able to reverse that. I should be able to reverse that damage by putting in good stuff, right, by putting in the right nutrients. And I should be able to affect all of these different theories of why a cell ages, and that's kind of where we come at it from the foundation. So we have to learn what these mechanisms are, and once we do that, then we can start researching the nutrients that might play a role in preserving cell health and cell age. So let's, if you look, for instance, at the membrane theory of cell aging, which is one of the first theories developed back in the 1950s. You know, a lot of people think of the cell membrane as this solid, almost skin-like structure over the cell. And although the cell membrane is amazing at how it keeps the inside and the outside of the cell separate, it's actually a very fluid and dynamic type of membrane. And there are lipids in there, there are proteins in there, there are certain receptors in the membrane. What we now know is that certain toxins from our foods, certain toxins from our environment, even certain toxins that our body makes through the natural cell energy production processes can damage the normal fluid nature of that membrane, and the cell membrane itself becomes more stiff. When that happens, the cell is not able to communicate as well. One of the key things that happens in the cell is these proteins become attacked by all the sugar, for instance, that we eat in our diet. You can consider sugar, when you're eating too much of it, as a toxin, because it attacks these proteins and it denatures the protein. That process is called glycation. And we know that glycation overall is a big, big theory now of why we age. And one of the supplements you mentioned that you were given to the rats, I found interesting because we've been looking at this supplement for quite some time, and that's carnosine. Carnosine is an amazing protein that I think if you're interested in preserving cell health and managing the age of your cells, it's a small protein that all of us should be doing, and it works in an astounding way. Carnosine, when you ingest it at least about maybe a gram or two a day, in a sense, it martyrs itself. It sacrifices itself. So when you have a lot of carnosine on board, the sugars and the toxins that are attacking the healthy essential body proteins and cell membrane proteins you have, instead they attack this carnosine, preserving the proteins in the cell membrane. So that cell membrane remains fluid and it allows the cell to communicate with other cells. I think carnosine is a big one for membrane health. Other supplements we like to use there are going to be carnitine, is another important one, and DMAE, which is an important compound that helps maintain the communication between cells and that fluid nature of the membrane. When you move from that membrane theory and we look inside the cell, what's going on inside the cell as it ages? Well, the next one we have to look at is the mitochondria. We know, you know, we've done rat studies where you could take young rats and you can take a biopsy of their muscle cells, and boy, they're loaded with mitochondria, the powerhouses, right? This is where the sugar and the oxygen get together to make ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is your energy currency, you know, if you will, for yourself. And young rat muscle cells are full of these mitochondria, big, fat mitochondria. They look healthy, they're producing a lot of energy. But then you take an older rat and do that same muscle biopsy, and you look and you can barely find any mitochondria. So we know that the loss of mitochondria, what we call mitochondrial decline or decay, is a definite factor in that biological aging. If the cell can't make energy, it's just not going to be able to function. And if the cell can't function, the tissue can't function, and eventually you're not going to be able to function. So we like to do things that are going to improve the mitochondria. And here's how we do it. There's three things we like to do. We like to enhance the function of the mitochondria. We like to protect the mitochondria. And then we like to produce more mitochondria. In order to enhance the function of the mitochondria, this is going to be supplements like CoQ10, D-ribose, carnitine, very important to enhancing the actual number of ATP molecules that you're able to produce. As far as protecting them, now remember, how do we make energy? How does the mitochondria make energy? Well, it needs What are the ingredients? Sugar and oxygen. So most of the sugar damage, the glycation I mentioned before, and oxidative stress, guess where it occurs? In the mitochondria, because that's where they're going. That's where they should go, at least, to make all that energy. So we need to do like carnosine again to protect the mitochondria from all that sugar. We need to make sure we're doing a lot of good antioxidants that will actually get into the mitochondria. The best one, in my opinion, is lipoic acid. Lipoic acid is one of the most unique antioxidants. It is able to live in a fat environment, but also in an aqueous or water environment. And that's what you need for the mitochondria. So lipoic acid is one of the best protectors of mitochondrial number and function. And then lastly, how do we make more mitochondria? Well, this is where pyroloquinolinquinone comes in. We just call it PQQ. Really, it is a human vitamin, although it's never been labeled that way. In my opinion, it is. It's just as important as any of the other vitamins. We run out of PQQ as we get older, and PQQ is essential to going in to your maternal DNA and producing more mitochondria out of that DNA. So we're gonna enhance, protect, and make more mitochondria. And you can feel this, by the way. You know, when I have, in my own experience, I had a father who suffered from a stroke, unfortunately, and had some congestive heart failure type symptoms. I had him on CoQ10, Gary, and that was working well for him because I knew I needed to rev up the ATP production in his heart cells, right? And so I was giving him CoQ10, and what you might consider higher doses, it was 400 to 600 milligrams of ubiquinol CoQ10, and he did a little bit better there, but he kind of plateaued. He reached this point where he was able to get out of bed a little bit better. He wasn't quite as short of breath, but he kind of plateaued and really wasn't improving. And I thought to myself, well, maybe that's because although I'm giving him the CoQ10 to enhance energy production, maybe I need to do something about the mitochondria specifically. I knew, you know, based on his age, based on the stroke, based on the heart failure, I needed him to make more mitochondria. I needed him to be like that young rat that has all these big fat mitochondria in the muscles. So what did I do? I added PQQ, 20 milligrams a day. He's been doing the CoQ10 PQQ combination now for about a year, and he is now, without shortness of breath, walking 30 minutes every single day. And I attribute that to the fact that not only am I enhancing energy production in the mitochondria, he's made more. He's made brand new mitochondria with this PQQ. That's how important that is, and I'm really excited for him, and he's feeling better. He's had a few of the stroke symptoms remain, but he's able to get up and do that walking every 30 minutes. So that's the power of enhancing those mitochondria, those powerhouses. Now, so as we move from the cell membrane into the cell, into the mitochondria, and we move further into the cell, we have to look at the genetic damage that's going on. That's the third biological theory of aging that we focus on at the foundation. What kind of DNA damage is going on? We know, one, we have the classic biological clock, which is the telomere. We know that every time your cell divides, that end of the chromosome shortens. The reason it does that is because you might get to a point where that cell has divided so many times, you might see more mutations. So it's kind of a control piece. However, when you do things to enhance the length of that telomere, that cell reverts back to a younger cell. That cell functions better. So we do like to enhance telomere length. Astragalus is a great way to do that, an herb that has been shown to increase telomere length in CD4 cells, immune cells. We do think that applies to other cells. But then you have classic DNA protection nutrients that we focus on here at Life Extension: cat's claw, indole-3-carbinol, mushroom extract, specifically reishi mushroom, seems to have a nice protective effect on DNA and protecting from that genetic damage. So now that you're focusing, Gary, on all of that cell health, you're improving the membrane, you're improving the mitochondria, you're protecting the DNA, we have to back up a little bit and we have to think, okay, I have to make sure, though, that I don't continue to damage the cell. So we have to look at things like oxidative stress, which is another big theory of aging. We know that free radical production, free radicals are simply oxygen-based compounds that are highly reactive. They bind to other proteins and fats in your cells and can disrupt the function of the cell, the structure of the cell, and lead to some aging issues. So we know that we need to reduce oxidative stress, right? That's why it's so important to make sure we're getting the deep, dark fruits and vegetables in our diet. The USDA in 2009 came out with a report showing that the average American is only getting about one or two servings of vegetables and one or two servings of fruits, and most of that from conventional farms with all of the pesticides and stuff, and it's just not helping all that much. So we need to make sure we're doing about 7 to 8 servings of those deep, dark fruits and vegetables. Why deep and dark? Because the darker the color, the greater the ORAC score. That is a score for how potent that food sources with antioxidants. The higher the ORAC, the more antioxidants from that food source. But you know what? In my book that I just wrote, The Supplement Pyramid, Gary, I talk about how, unfortunately, food just may not be enough today, you know, given the quality of our soil, a lot of the toxins in our environment. So I do believe that taking some antioxidants in supplement form is also very important as well. I know in my own regimen, I've added a nice antioxidant blend that comes from many different types of dark-colored fruits and vegetables. It's a couple capsules a day, and I do believe that's increasing my ORAC value inside my body, inside my cells, greater than food alone could do. And I eat a pretty good diet, by the way. I do focus on organic produce. I am one that eats around 7 to 8 servings of those fruits and vegetables every day, but I just recognize that the food today is not the food that it was 100, 200, 300 years ago, just simply because of the environment that I live in today. So I do believe antioxidants are important. And then, of course, after the oxidative stress, we have to look at what is called glycation. Glycation is when we have all of the refined sugars that we find in our diet. When you're not burning that sugar as energy, unfortunately, it's going to do some damage. Sugar is a highly reactive compound. And we know that even slight elevations in sugar can cause problems. Let me give you an example. There was a study in the United Kingdom called the Whitehall study. It is the sister study to the Framingham population study going on in the United States. Well, the Whitehall study, this particular version of Whitehall was called Whitehall 2. It showed that even just slight elevations in blood sugar, we're talking levels of, say, 100, 105, 110, really not even what conventional doctors would call pre-diabetic, just slight elevations put people at the same cardiovascular risk as a diabetic. Why that type of information is not being translated over into everyday clinical practice, I can't tell you. We know that we need optimal blood sugar levels in about that 70 to 85 range. The conventional doctors need to bring down their numbers. Unfortunately, they're not. And there's a lot of people who think their sugar levels are fine, and I look at their labs and like, no, it's not. There's a lot of glycation damage going on. This theory of aging called glycation is also called the cross-linking theory. What happens, again, sugar is highly reactive. It doesn't just sit there. You either burn it, you either store it, or it causes damage. It's that simple. And when it causes damage, it does so because it can react with body proteins. And when it reacts with a protein in your body, what it does is it damages the structure of that protein. It causes these little cross-linking arms of the protein to develop that shouldn't be there, and it destroys the structure. Well, here's the thing. When it comes to proteins in your body, the structure determines the function. So sugar attacks the structure of the protein, which means it's destroying the function. So all of these proteins in your body, proteins that are in the cell membrane that we talked about, proteins that are involved in cell energy production, proteins that are involved in the health of your nerves and the neuron sheath and how nerves conduct, all of those types of proteins can be destroyed because of sugar, because of glycation, this cross-linking. And once that happens, once that protein is damaged like that, there's no repair of it. So we need to do things that protect our bodies from excess sugar. Now, of course, you got to avoid the sugar as much as you can. Fresh food, organic produce, real food. Don't eat anything packaged. As a matter of fact, I can't stand it. I go shopping sometimes with my sister. She has three kids. We go into the grocery store, Gary, and she walks in and she goes right to the middle aisles. Why do I hate that? Because the middle aisles of your grocery stores, they do this on purpose, by the way. They funnel you into these middle aisles where it's all the processed food. It's all the fake food. It's all the canned and boxed foods. Those things are loaded with sugar. And it drives me crazy that she does this, and that's why I really don't go shopping with her that much. When you walk into the grocery store, you need to walk to the outside aisles. That's where the fresh foods, the produce are. That's where you need to be spending 80-90% of your money when it comes to your weekly, you know, grocery bill. When you do that, you're going to avoid all of that prepackaged refined sugar that's causing glycation. But even with that said, it's all over. I think we all need to protect from glycation. And so some of the supplements that we've focused on at Life Extension, we've already talked about the carnosine, so important. Carnosine is that martyr. It kind of sacrifices itself. The sugar attacks the carnosine you're supplementing with instead of your own body proteins. There is a vitamin called benfotiamine or benfotiamine. You can say it either way. That's a fat-soluble form of B1. This is so important. Vitamin B1 plays a critical role in how your body metabolizes sugar. So the more B1 you have on board, the better your body handles that excess sugar. So you avoid the glycation reactions. Instead, it goes into the mitochondria to be burned for energy, or it gets stored as glycogen when you have more B1 on board. The third one that I like is another B vitamin. It's B6, specifically pyridoxamine. Pyridoxamine is a form of B6 that helps to manage all, just like B1, all of these metabolic processes that sugar is involved with. When you have more B1 and B6 on board, it's a very simple concept. You're managing sugar better. So carnosine, B1, and B6, critical to reversing this cross-linking effect that's destroying proteins at that cellular level. The last theory that we focus on are the hormones. Hormones are important because they are the messengers between your brain and your cell. I used to say, Gary, hormones are the messengers between your brain and your body, but that's not descriptive enough. What I like to say now is hormones are the key messenger between your brain and your cell, specifically your DNA. Hormones carry a message from the brain that a certain cell line, whether it's your heart or your muscles or your immune cells, it's carrying a message from the brain that the brain needs that cell line to do something specific. Maybe it's increased blood pressure a little bit because you're exercising. Maybe it's to increase a certain white blood cell because there's a recognition of a bacteria in your blood. Whatever it may be, the brain knows what it needs to do. It sends that message, you know, all packaged together in this hormone, and the hormone goes right to the DNA. It goes to the blueprint of that cell and is able to positively influence the way those genes are expressed to get a positive response out of the cell and the tissue. Well, guess what? As we get older, we lose hormones. I mean, you can take one like DHEA, so important. DHEA is, I consider it the true anti-aging hormone. DHEA, when you look at the whole hormonal cascade, you start with pregnenolone. Pregnenolone turns into the progesterone and then to DHEA. DHEA then becomes your testosterone and your estrogens. So DHEA is right in the middle of this hormonal cascade. It's anti-aging because it involves metabolism. It involves how you're going to handle sugar. It involves a certain amount of role on what we call the CERT genes, the anti-aging genes. I mean, DHEA is critical to so many cell lines, from your heart, brain, immune system. But here's the thing. There's good studies showing that in each decade of life, you lose anywhere from 10 to 15% of your total DHEA. So by the time so maybe your DHEA levels peak when you're 20, but by the time you're 50, I mean, you've lost 30, 40, 50% of that. So now you have this key message that your brain needs. It uses DHEA to send this message to your heart, your brain, your immune system, and it can't get the message there. The DHEA is not there to talk to the DNA to get that positive change in those cells that's needed. So we do believe that the loss of hormones is a key reason we see an increase in age-related disorders as we get older, and also just the biological aging. So at least I want to encourage your listeners to go check your hormone levels. You can do it through saliva, there's hair analysis, there's blood. Just get your levels checked and start to optimize those hormones, and I think it all should begin with DHEA. So here's what we've done. We've moved essentially from the DNA out to the mitochondria, out to the cell membrane, and then we've gone outside the cell looking at the oxidative stress, looking at the glycation, and looking at the hormones. So the Life Extension Foundation, we really believe that we're being very comprehensive when it comes to doing the best that we can do to manage each stage of cellular aging from the inside out. And we think this is the best way to manage that aging process to produce younger, healthier cells, which means you're going to live, we do believe, longer.
Michael, I appreciate these insights. Now I want to go to something you said earlier, where you were mentioning the six major areas that people have to be educated at the biological level, at the cellular level. And I want to do it a little differently.
Okay.
I'd like you to consider an average person sitting down to a meal. They're going to have a soft drink, frequently high fructose corn syrup or sugar, about 9 to 10 teaspoons. They're going to have a piece of meat, and in many cases they have two pieces of meat, anywhere from 8 to 14 ounces of protein, or about what the body actually requires. If you assume that about 50% of that is protein, the other is fat and fibrous and water, if you take 16 ounces to a pound and you take half of that, which is 8, and you realize that 8 ounces times, let's say, 28.35 grams to an ounce, so let's round it off to 28, so 28 times 8. All right, already you're at three days worth of protein, 3 days, with one single burger. Now, that's not even a super burger. That's not that's not what it is. Man versus food.
Right. And most people are eating man versus food sizes now, right?
Yeah. Yes, they are. Look at by the way, have you noticed that the restaurants that he shoots his program in are always the most popular ones in that city?
Pretty sad, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, and then, of course, he makes it more popular as well.
Yes. So. And then, like, last night I watched as he consumed almost a gallon of a milkshake. Imagine how many grams of sugar and calories he had.
Yeah.
Plus he had 6 pounds of meat, and yet he ate both of those within an hour. And I was thinking, I did the math. He consumed over 7,000 calories, and he consumed well over 500 grams of protein. That's enough to actually kill a person.
Yes, yeah. So there's a couple different issues there, isn't there? You, on one hand, Gary, you have the calorie excess issue. You already know from your own research in rats, and this has been substantiated over and over again, that calorie restriction, it has longevity benefits to the organism, and that comes through the CERT protein. So here you have somebody, so the average American on an average dinner, whatever it may be, it's not just the total protein, it's the fact it's total calories is also an important thing to consider there. We know that food itself, even healthy food, can be a stress on the body. Food can increase oxidative stress, right? And so the more you're eating, the more of those free radicals you're producing, and that's a stress on the body. We also know that when you're over-consuming the protein, like you mentioned, right? I mean, some people are literally getting all of their protein in 2 or 3 days' worth in one hamburger, right? So what is that doing? Well, we know that the red meat specifically have arachidonic acid in them. Arachidonic acid turns on the pro-inflammatory pathways in the human body. Arachidonic acid turns into the cytokines, the leukotrienes. Now, you do need that pathway somewhat. We need without inflammation, you can't live. But it was never meant to be turned on like a flood. It's supposed to be a faucet that goes on and off when you need it. Instead, because of what we're doing to our bodies, what we're putting in, all that protein, you're turning on that arachidonic pro-inflammatory pathway. It's like this huge faucet. I mean, it's like just flooding your sink. It's overflowing into your bathroom. All that water represents inflammation. And we already know that inflammation can be very damaging to the cells and tissues. So here you have a situation where you got the average American eating too much. That's a stressor. And then most of them are engorging themselves on pro-inflammatory food sources, turning on that arachidonic acid pathway like it was never meant to be turned on. We overwhelm our system too fast. We can't handle that kind of inflammation, and it causes a lot of the damage. I've often said, Gary, that inflammation coming from excess calorie, coming from excess red meats, the poor quality meats, all of that inflammation is the common denominator of every age-related disorder that is epidemic today in this country.
Take us then through what a person would consume in a normal day and what happens when that food or beverage goes into their system, the amount they consume, how it's prepared, the quality, the food, the combinations that go in, and then show us why we end up aging prematurely, why our mitochondria are inefficient, and take us to what you would then suggest would help change that so people can get a real clear understanding.
Well, let's do this in stages. Let's first just look at total calories. Like when you eat any given meal, that calorie burden that you're putting into your system now, in and of itself causes stress. Okay, the more calories that you put in it at one sitting, the greater that stress. Now, what I mean by that stress, the actual terminology I'm going to use here is oxidative stress. There's a couple things that happen. The food itself that you're eating has some free radicals in it. Now, remember, free radicals are simply compounds that are oxygen-based species that like to attack your cells and tissues. So the food you eat, if you're eating that standard American diet, which is very sad, S-A-D, sad, has a lot of pesticides, has a lot of toxins, preservatives, nitrates, salts, all of those compounds, all of those chemicals have free radicals. So just the food itself that you're eating increases oxidative stress. Why is that important? We already know that oxidative stress is one of the key theories of why the cell ages. So you're bombarding your blood and eventually your tissues and the cell with free radicals with that standard American diet. That's the first thing. But here's the thing. We don't just eat a little bit of it. We eat in excess this kind of food. McDonald's supersized French fry, that's just the normal size now. You know, there's no small, medium, large anymore. Everybody just supersizes everything, where supersizes become it. So we're putting all of those free radicals into our system by this really unhealthy food, and we're over-consuming it, which means that calorie excess itself produces oxidative stress as well. Why? Because you're causing your digestive system to overwork. You're causing the transport proteins that carry fats around to overwork. And that means when you're overworking any one of those systems, you're needing to make more energy. Well, there is a downside to making all that cellular energy. I mean, we need to make cell energy, but the downside when it's over, when it's done in excess like that, is you produce free radicals. You know, Gary, I also like to teach that everything in life has a flip side. You need those mitochondria to make energy, but every time some energy is made, a free radical is made. And so if you're bombarding your system with all of this excess calorie and all of the free radicals from the food, the level of oxidative stress in your body after following a meal, maybe 1 or 2 hours later, is, it could be 5, 6, 7 times higher than what it was before that meal. And you wonder why you're so tired. It's not just because your stomach is distended. You're overworking your cells and your tissues, and they're being damaged by all of that oxidative stress. So the food we eat and the amount of it literally is the catalyst to the free radical theory of cell aging. The free radical theory of cell aging came about because we noticed what our food was doing to us. So we already know what's driving one of the theories of cellular aging. So if you want to avoid that, besides the antioxidants I talked about, we need to, again, when you go shopping, you need to buy food at the ends, the aisles at the ends of the grocery store. It needs to be fresh, organic produce, and you need to eat until you're satisfied, not until you're full. If you eat until where you're distended, and like you mentioned, your family members and my family members, I laugh, I shouldn't laugh, it's sad, where they have to unbutton their pants a little bit, right? If you're eating to that stage, which most Americans are every single meal, you are simply feeding this free radical theory of aging. So we need to eat less, and we need to eat fresh food. That, do you know that what impact that could have on the average American if they simply just ate less and added more of the fresh fruits and vegetables to each meal? I have some longevity in my family, Gary. It's on my mom's side. It is on the Greek side. Now, here's what's amazing about them. They didn't really take care of themselves on the Greek side, but they did eat right. And here's what I remember my grandma. The average dinner that she would make was loaded with leafy greens, dark leafy greens. It had some really fresh fermented food like a feta. I remember the olives. I remember the tomatoes. All of this grown by her. I remember this. And the protein they had was very small, 3 or 4 ounces, not 10 to 12 ounces like we eat today. That's how your dinner plate should look. Despite the fact that she smoked and drank, that's how she ate. And she lived well into her 90s. So that shows you what your dinner plate should look like. Smaller, it should be colored, and it should be fresh. And it should be a very, very small protein amount. That's going to decrease oxidative stress, and that's going to help your cells avoid all of that damage. Now, keep in mind, too, if we're going to talk about this, we already talked about the protein and the inflammation. What about all that sugar, you know, the sugary drinks that people are consuming with their supersized McDonald's meals, the high fructose corn syrup that people are bathing in basically today? You know what? I'm convinced fructose is a poison. I've studied the physiology of fructose and what it does to the liver. Fructose, not only does it raise uric acid and cause gout in people, it also stimulates fat production in the liver. So all of these people who are consuming all of this protein, all of the excess calories, the salts, the nitrates, inflammation is up, oxidative stress is up, and then they're causing their livers with all this fructose to get congested. It's called a non-alcoholic fatty liver, and the liver can't detoxify all this gunk that they're putting in the system, which means the one internal organ you have to do all that is congested and can't do its job. Now you compound the issue of inflammation and oxidative stress. But here's the thing. Here's the good news, Gary. All of this is reversible. It's so simple. It really is. We need to eat less. We need to eat the fresh fruits. We need to eat like my grandma, like a lot of those leafy dark greens, the tomatoes, the olives, very small protein source. We need to get rid of all those sugary drinks. Forget all of those fructose syrup, all that stuff. You got to take that out of your home. Stick with good filtered water. Oh, I'm convinced just right there the impact that we could have on people's health. We'll reduce oxidative stress. We'll reduce inflammation. We're gonna decongest the liver so it can do its detox job. Oh, people are going to feel better right there.
That's good. Now, there are three other areas before we finish today, and one has to deal with people are concerned that they're only getting a limited medical approach that in most cases does not reverse any condition, only keeps some of the symptoms manifesting, such as the statins for heart disease. But one of the most common conditions, say, with the heart is either AFib, or arrhythmias. And there's nothing orthodox medicine can do to prevent a stroke or heart attack except keep the blood thin. But in the process of keeping the blood thin to prevent a heart attack or stroke, we have 24,000+ people die a year from using blood thinners like aspirin.
Right.
So you don't have a heart attack, but you end up with dying from bleeding. Or you don't have a stroke because your blood is thin enough that the red blood cells do not aggregate or clump, but the aspirin destroys folic acid, B12, B6,
right,
and trimethylglycine, so you end up with a heart attack. And with elevated homocysteine, you can increase your risk, let's say if it's up around 15, 16, 17, instead of around 5, 6, or 7, where it should be, you could have a 200 to 300% increase in heart attack. So on the one hand, we're only getting part of the story. Yes, take aspirin and prevent a stroke, but they don't say, yes, take aspirin and increase your risk of a heart attack. And yet these are both given by cardiologists, which is the hypocrisy of the system. So let's first talk about the heart.
Okay.
Then we'll talk about inflammation in our joints. And then we're going to save the last, which is the biggest one, in my opinion, facing us. Dementia, Alzheimer's,
okay,
Parkinson's,
definitely,
brain aging, which is,
yes,
right now you're looking at 90 to 100 million of us over 40, and that is going to be an epidemic of disease that we're facing. So let's go through each one of these. We only have about 13 minutes.
Okay. So you want to start with the heart.
Let's talk a little bit about the heart.
Yeah, you know, Gary, what's frustrating to me as a medical doctor, because I was trained this way. I was trained that In my thinking, my mentality is this one symptom, one drug approach, right? Where I identify a risk factor or a symptom, I apply a drug to it, and everything is all happy, and we can move on with our lives. And we know that type of paradigm, that type of thinking, really doesn't work, because when it comes to age-related disorders like heart disease, we're really dealing with a multifactorial pathogenesis, aren't we? We're dealing with multiple issues going on. Now, let's just look at the heart. When I was in medical school, Gary, this is right before statins. I even trained with Brown and Goldstein. They won the Nobel Prize for the cholesterol cycle in the body. I worked in their lab. I had the privilege of learning about cholesterol, LDL, and all the subfractions of LDL and HDL with them, with those amazing researchers. And from that research came the statin medications. And I remember being in medical school. I remember being told that in 20 years, we're going to eradicate heart disease because of this miracle drug called a statin. Well, wait a second. It's been over 20 years now, and heart disease still remains our number one killer. What are we missing? You know what we're missing? We're missing about 16 other risk factors, because in conventional medicine, in that one disease, one symptom, one drug mentality, there is that misunderstanding, that missing of that more holistic approach we should be taking on all of these age-related disorders. There are 16 other risk factors besides high LDL cholesterol that you need to address. And when you start to address those other risk factors and start countering them through diet and through targeted nutrition, targeted supplements, then you'll start making some headway in decreasing the incidence and prevalence of heart attack and stroke. You mentioned one of them, for instance, homocysteine. Conventional cardiologists still aren't fully have bought into this idea that homocysteine even is a risk factor, even though I can show them research that this type of amino acid can directly damage the cells that line the inside of the arteries called the endothelial cells. And these endothelial cells connect together, Gary, with these adhesion molecules. And when you break or disrupt those adhesion molecules, it tears a little bit the endothelium, and that's the beginning of atherosclerosis, that injury to the endothelium. There's evidence that homocysteine directly damages those adhesion molecules. That's a risk factor that conventional doctors have not jumped on, and guess how you treat it? B vitamins. Trimethylglycine. You're talking 8-10 cents a day with some of this stuff. Yet they don't focus on that, and they keep increasing the dose of the statin medications, which has all kinds of side effects. There are 15 other risk factors. You got to look at your hormones. You need to look at inflammation, right? We need to look at low vitamin D. Vitamin D does affect the heart. As a matter of fact, vitamin D affects every cell in your body. We have to look at low vitamin K. People are concerned about calcium intake today. Well, you know, in the studies that show a connection between calcium supplements and heart disease, what they're not telling you is these subjects in these studies are also deficient in vitamin D and vitamin K. That's because calcium doesn't work right when you don't have enough D and vitamin K on board. When you take calcium as a supplement and you have low vitamin D and vitamin K, it causes calcinosis. That calcium does get deposited in tissues instead of the bones. But when you have optimal levels of D and vitamin K, guess what? The calcium goes into the bones where it belongs. No one talks about that in these studies. We've recognized at the foundation a long time ago that if you optimize vitamin D and vitamin K and take your calcium, that increases your heart health, that protects your heart. Conventional cardiologists aren't talking about that. We also know that low EPA DHA, the omega-3 oils, is a risk factor. So it simply backs up to this. Heart disease is not a one mechanism disease, which means one drug is not going to solve the problem. That statin is nothing but a Band-Aid that focuses on one risk factor. A long time ago, the Life Extension Foundation published 17 what we called heart disease daggers, these daggers stabbing the heart. And until the conventional cardiologists focus on all 17 of those, people will continue to die from heart attacks, even though they've lowered their bad cholesterol to the point where there's almost none in their blood. They still have heart attacks, because they're not addressing those 16 other risk factors.
And what would you suggest specifically, because this is a big question we get asked here, about irregular heartbeat, AFib, tachycardia, arrhythmias?
Well, I got to tell you, so AFib, I've been very successful at controlling AFib with one mineral, magnesium. I teach my patients the Valsalva maneuver, which is a bearing down, almost like you're going to the bathroom. You just kind of bear down. That activates the vagus nerve, which helps to settle that racy heart. And then you add about, maybe a gram of magnesium on that, and I can cardiovert people back to normal sinus rhythm simply with that. No drugs, Valsalva maneuver, and magnesium. Now, in order to prevent the heart from going into AFib, which is the most common irregular heartbeat we have, hawthorn extract works great. Hawthorn has this ability to help the heart rhythm maintain itself. You can even do a combination of hawthorn and arjuna. Great combination to prevent the AFib. But I tell all of my AFib patients, keep some magnesium on hand, and if you ever feel that flutter kick in, you take some magnesium, about a gram, and you Valsalva, boom, you're right out of it. I don't need any harsh, fancy drugs for that.
See how simple that is?
Yeah, it really is.
AFib shouldn't be killing anybody, and generally it doesn't. It's not the worst of the conditions. but it's something that medicine has not addressed in something as simple as magnesium and hawthorn. How simple is that? Inexpensive is that? Those are two of the least expensive minerals there
are. They are, and they could do so good for so many people.
Dr. Michael Smith, thank you very much for sharing these great insights in our continuing series on anti-aging, about cellular aging, regeneration, health benefits of nutraceuticals for anti-aging. Down in Fort Lauderdale, and the website down there is RadioMD.com. Also, what's your website?
They can go to MySupplementPyramid.com and also check out the way that I personalize nutrient regimens for people, MySupplementPyramid.com.
All the best to you. We look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening.
Volare. Cantare, oh, nel blu dipinto di blu, felice di stare lassù.